Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics, such as...
Charmed, the one from back in the day, not the new one, but that's, like, super gay, right? Like, it's San Francisco. What are they even doing?
I don't think there was one gay person on that whole show, except for every demon.
Right.
All that makeup. Why would you have a show in San Francisco about witches and none of them are gay?
Seriously.
Even subtextually.
In my mind... they were gay.
I mean, honestly, they were.
The seer was gay. Yeah.
What up, cabrona?
What's poppin', chingona? What's good?
Nothing. We're just sitting here with, like, the awesomest, like, TV writer in the world, Michelle Badillo. What's good?
What's up? Breh, breh, breh.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm dehydrated, but I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, we
chug that water.
It. Yeah, we got water for you.
And I'll make sure I chug right next to the mic.
ASMR.
ASMR video. Yeah. Let's do this.
All right, dope. Well, let's tell the listeners a little bit about you. We know quite a bit, but maybe you have a different way you want to introduce yourself.
Let's see. I'm a writer. Very occasionally an actor. I very gay, very Latina. I grew up in Queens. One time and never again director.
Oh, never again.
So what happened with this directing gig?
When I just got out of school, I got into the LA Outfest Outset Young Filmmakers Mentorship Fellowship program. That's like 8 more words than it actually has in the title. And so it's like 15 kids, and they make you all write scripts, and they pick 5, and then you make them in groups of 3, and they pay for it, which is, it's an amazing program. So my script was one of the ones that got picked, and I was like, I, you know, stars in my eyes, was like, and I'm gonna direct it.
Yeah,
because it's my vision, and only I'm gonna be able to
express that,
you know, express that, and only I know what I mean. And oh my god, you have to know everything about, you have to know how you want the set to look, you have to, like, actually know how to direct actors, you just seriously have to know what you want from every single aspect of the filmmaking process. And I honestly think that if you don't, it's disrespectful to those people. Like, if the sound person is like, I mean, you have to, sound is, like, literally the worst example I could have picked, but, like, if a hair person says to you, like, what does this character's hair look like, and you say, like, oh, I don't care, whatever, that's very disrespectful of what that person's, like, entire job is. It's like if somebody asked me, like, and what is the character's, like, and if I ask them, I don't know, what, you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah,
the point is that it's really, like, you, I was not prepared for how much I needed to know and care about every single. So I think I actually was the worst person to try and execute my own vision. It came out fine in the end, but I was so stressful that as soon as we called cut, like, for the last time, I just, like, immediately started crying hysterically, like, uncontrollably, like I haven't since I was a baby. So it was an amazing experience, and I learned a lot, but it's a lot to take on.
Yeah, that's, you learned you didn't want to be a director.
You just have
shout out to that.
You have to have incredible vision and be able to talk to everyone and have an idea about everything. And I am, like, way too chill to have an opinion about everything. That's not totally true. Actually, I feel like that's going to come clear very soon that that's actually not true at all.
So speaking of figuring out what you wanted to be, let's talk a little bit about your background, like where you're from and how you ended up becoming passionate about writing.
I'm from Queens, as I said. That wasn't a shade, like, you guys weren't listening.
Might be true, though.
I think I was always good at writing as a kid, like, you know, elementary school homework stuff. I wouldn't say it was necessarily fun, but it came naturally to me. It came easily. Like, if I had a book report due, I could wake up at 6 that morning and, like, bang it out. So that was just, like, useful in terms of my being lazy and not liking to do homework. I just always really wanted to be an actor. And then when I hit puberty and, like, thought I was, like, the most disgusting person, like, to ever live, I was like, no one is ever going to want to see this face on screen, which is a horrible thing to say to your
And completely wrong.
Or about any... Well, I didn't look like this, okay? But then I was like, well, maybe they will if I write the part for myself. Like, maybe nobody's going to write a part for me. I have to learn how to write a part for myself. So that's kind of how, like, I started to get into the idea of it. And then I didn't want to go to college. I wanted to act. But this is while this was all happening. And my mom was like, there's no way. I've been putting money away for you to go to school since like before you were born. There's no way you're not going to school. If you want to be in Hollywood so badly, why don't you go to school for screenwriting? And I was like, okay, yeah, I've kind of been thinking like that's actually my way into acting. So
dope. She knew.
She got me. She totally manipulated the hell out of me, because by the time I got to like literally maybe like a week into school, I completely forgot that like I wanted to be in. I was acting like it was my idea. I was like, I've always wanted to be a writer. I've always known. It's just like, how lucky am I that I've always known what I wanted to be? Like immediately, like no self-awareness at all. But because I love writing for TV, like for film and TV in college. And I realized like me and my now writing partner and another one of my friends, we were like the only three people in the whole screenwriting program who actually liked to do it.
Wow.
When we actually had to do it. Like, a lot of kids in film school are like really smart, amazing kids who love movies and love TV. And then when they actually have to write it, they're like, oh, I think I hate this. Like, yeah. I really like movies, but I don't want to like write them or ditto TV. So we were the only ones who, when it wasn't homework, we still wanted to do it. And that was when I was like, okay, I think this is like serious. I think maybe I can. This is a serious thing for me, which you kind of have to be like a little delusional, because like as soon as you start film school, they tell you, just so you know, the average screenwriter makes $11,000 a year. You can't make a living on it. So you're like, all right, well then like I better get it. If I don't love it, I better get the hell out. And then luckily I decided to write TV, which is steadier gig than movies.
Yeah, I couldn't even fathom like being like a film screen, like there's not even, you know, I mean, yeah, you just, it's basically a gamble,
and nobody even makes movies, like they don't even make movies anymore. Like you either can make like huge superhero movie blockbusters, or like they don't even really make like indie movies the way like quote indie movies used to be. Like indie movies now all have like A-list actors in them, and their budgets are not like indie. Like you just
they're not real indies.
You can't just like be somebody who writes a movie and maybe it gets made. That's like almost impossible.
That's a sad truth. That makes me like really bummed.
Yeah, it's super, super bummer. Yeah.
But like TV on the flip side has gotten so fucking good in the past decade, especially.
It's just like, it's because there's so much now and there's so many different platforms for TV to be on. People are more, and like the business model has changed. People are so much more interested now in taking risks and giving more people opportunities to do weird things or things about like people who are quote other. And that's why you're seeing now like more and more people are turning to TV, because everybody can find something that they're like super passionate about.
It's true diversity now versus, well, I mean, it was still kind of diverse in the 90s when we were growing up. And that's what I want to ask, maybe what were you watching when you were growing up?
It's so funny. Like, I always, like, I have this joke about 90s diversity, where it's, like, if you look at, like, cartoons and, like, kid shows, especially from the 90s, it was, like, they just had one person of every color, but it didn't, like, they had, like, no context. It just, like, just it was just there. Sort of, like, we must have a rainbow everywhere we go. That was, like, the colorblind era, when was, like, the way not to be racist. But growing up, oh, my God, Taina. Did you guys watch Taina? This is, like, the most important show that no one knows about. No one knows it. It's fine. I'm like not surprised. I've met like three other people in my life who knew it. Wow. But Taina was a show on Teen Nick, you know, where it was like Nickelodeon, but like, kind of cool, but not quite MTV yet.
After 9.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, wow. After, maybe even like after 8:30. So you might actually be awake
cable
for
in
it.
The 90s? Yeah. That's amazing.
We had illegal boxes.
Exactly.
Everyone in the neighborhood.
Mine only worked in the rain, so
I remember we had like Disney Channel for one day because like some wire got crossed. Anyway, so there was this show called Taina that was about a Puerto Rican girl in Queens who wanted to grow up to be, wanted to be an actress, and she went to the performing arts high school. And it was like a fully Puerto Rican family. Like, they live with abuela. Like, it was kind of like, besides the fact that there was a dad, like, it was kind of the setup of One Day at a Time.
Oh, shit.
And it was on for like 1 or 2 years, and I watched every week religiously. I was like, oh my God, I've never seen this in my life. Like, I've never seen people who kind of look like my family. I never even knew I could. Like, you don't realize that it's important to you until you see it for the first time.
Exactly.
Because all you're watching is like white people on TV, and you don't know when you see somebody else that you didn't even realize you were starving for it. And that was super, also to see like somebody who wanted to do the same thing I wanted to do. I mean, that was like life changing.
That's amazing.
I think it's impossible to find now. You might be able to find the theme song, which was sick. You might be able to find it.
I'll freaking find this
on
show.
YouTube.
If I have to, we're gonna start doing these Google stores. Yeah. If I have to, like, whatever I have to do, I'll find it.
Taina, that's wild. And my sister's name was Tiana, and her name was Taina, and I was like, it's like, we're meant to be. Like, it was crazy.
Totally. Oh my God. Okay, so you go to film school, and then you're here in LA, and you're wanting to be a TV writer. So I've heard a little bit about your story, but how was your, you know, every TV writer has a different, completely different story about how they broke in, but what was your story on that?
So my now writing partner, Caroline, and I had coincidentally every single screenwriting class together ever. Wow. And we both ended up taking, there weren't a lot of TV classes in film school. That's still true for a lot of film schools. They still don't respect TV. There were two TV classes they offered in the entire four-year program. It was the writing for the one-hour drama and writing for the half-hour sitcom. So I was like, duh, sitcom, like, I'm hilarious. We both signed up for, Caroline and I, my writing partner, both signed up for that class. And we get to class, and this, like, the tiniest woman you've ever seen walks in. She's the professor, and she sits down, and she feels like she's the tallest person in the room. Like, she immediately dommed us. She was like, put your phone away. I'm not your friend. You can't eat in here. Like, she was so scary, and we were all so excited. And we also knew she was like the one professor in the entire film school that was currently a TV writer. I think she, so anyway, this tiny, like, dominatrix witch, yeah. Latina, walks in, doms all of us. Her name is Gloria Calderon Kellett. She literally was only teaching, she's my now boss on One Day at a Time, the co-creator and co-showrunner. She at the time was only teaching at LMU because she wanted to get her daughter into the daycare program there, which has like the craziest wait list. But wow. If you're faculty, they bump your kid up to the front. So she taught a class so that her kid could go to the preschool.
Genius.
Yeah. So, like, she taught one semester of undergrad. We happened to take that class. And there was, like, 14 of us in the class. And she was like, I'm sure you guys are all great. I don't have time to read 14 scripts. You have to pair up. She had read both mine and Caroline's writing. And she was like, I think you guys should pair up. And I was like, that white sorority girl, like, you're tripping. And Caroline's like, that crazy lesbian, like, you're tripping, like, no. But we were like, okay, all right. And we, like, the first night, like, we were writing a Modern Family spec. Like, the first night, we had like the most amazing time ever. And I was like, we both were like, I can't believe this is making sense. Like, it makes no sense. And I think Gloria saw some of her own writing style and our writing style and saw something that it wasn't that we were necessarily the best writers in the class, even though we were, but I think it was more that she, like, we had voices that she understood and that she could help foster because it was, you know, something she understood. And she sort of became our mentor after, of course, like, after the first day of her being, like, so scary. She's the nicest angel woman in the world.
She truly is.
And she's, like, she's a literal angel. And of course, like, very quickly, we were, like, all eating in class after she had screamed at us. Yes. We were, like, never allowed to have food in her room. She's, like, bringing in food, being, like, you know. So I was, like, I knew you were playing us. But so she kind of became our mentor. And after that was, I think, my sophomore year. After we were done with that class, like, we kept in contact with her. And then after we graduated, and anytime she asked us to do anything, we would do it. If it was like, hey, I'm doing these plays, can you guys be stage crew? We would go be stage crew. If she was like, can you organize my closet or, like, help run my kids' birthday parties, Caroline would do those things. I have no skills in either of those departments. But so we just, like, can maintain this relationship, and she would always let us ask her anything we wanted to ask about the business. So we kind of stayed in touch, and she knew that we were still writing and still hustling and, you know, still willing to, like, do whatever for free. Anyway, then she called us out of the blue one day, and she was like, hey, so I just got my own show on Netflix. Do you guys want to come?
Deal.
Yeah, we were like, oh my God, like, you know. And she was like, yes, so do you guys want to come be assistants? You know, Caroline will be my assistant and Michelle will be the writer's assistant. And I was like, yes. I mean, this is like 2 years out of school. I just saw a picture that I sent my sister a few years ago. I had $1.12 in my bank account. Ooh, like,
that's real.
That's really real. That's
really fucking real.
And I like could not, I had done like some PA work for like commercials and stuff, but I had no, it's a catch-22 to try and break into the business. It's like, can't get a writing job unless you have an agent. You can't get an agent unless you have a writing job. You can't get an administrative job unless, like, you can't get an entry-level administrative job unless you have experience.
And so, also, yeah, that's true.
And, well, mostly if you know somebody, right. Which you, yeah, do from experience. So, but I had done that fellowship, which didn't pay, but I had done that fellowship. So she knew I was still hustling. Where was I in my story? Oh, yeah. Anyway, so she was, and Caroline was working on the Goldbergs as an assistant, and I was so jealous of her, not realizing she was, like, getting people's coffee orders. Mm. But even still, I was like, that's dope. Like, I'm eating, like, ranch dressing that I ordered, like, got from Domino's 2 weeks ago because, like, I can't buy food. And I was like, yes, I would love to be here. I would love to be an assistant. Like, sign me up. That was on a Thursday. Mm-hmm. Friday, she called us and was like, so are you guys still writing together? And we were like, yeah, kind of. Like, we passed stuff back and forth. And she was like, okay, great. So we actually need young writers. And I'm not really liking a lot of the stuff I'm seeing. So would you guys want to be writers on the show instead of assistants? And we were like, no, we'd rather be Yeah, of course you want to be writers on the show. And she was like, great. So send me your like, guys' samples of stuff you've written together. Send me your pilot and your spec by Monday. By Monday. And we were like, okay, great. We didn't have a sample together. The only spec we had was the Modern Family spec we wrote for her class that she already graded. So she's going to know that's not real. Yeah. That was like 4 years before. So we couldn't use that. So what we eventually decided to do is Caroline and I each sent in our own specs and our own pilots. And that night we wrote a play together so that we could show, like, these are our voices separately. This is how they look together. We're sorry we don't have anything else, but, and also I also wrote my spec that night. I hadn't had one, which is very bad. If you want to be a writer, you should always have a spec, but I'm an idiot.
People will tell you otherwise. They're like, oh, original is the way to go.
You have to have both. I would say you have to have both.
You need both, yeah.
You have to have as many things in your packet as, I always say, like, and not just because this is what we did, but a spec, an original pilot, and like a shorter piece of writing that you think showcases your voice, because most agents and managers like don't really want to read a script. They're like, what's this person's voice? Oh, this thing is 5 pages. That's how we got our agent. They were like, oh yeah, we read your play. And we were like, what about the other hundreds of pages that we wrote for you? And he was like, I read the 10 page play. It was great.
Did you get your agent after being stepped on one day at a time?
Yes, that helped too. Right. But anyway, I feel like I'm going into way too much detail. But the point is that then that Monday we had a staffing meeting on one day at a time and we got the job, and then we didn't start for another 6 months. So I had to borrow money from my sister.
I can imagine.
That's real.
Just Uber around. I kind of want to talk about like this concept of diverse writers, because for one, it's like super difficult to break in. Like you said, like you had a very like, even though as talented as you are, like it was a very lucky thing that happened to you. But actually before that, I know that like writing partners, it's literally like there's one job and they basically put two people to do the one job,
you
right?
Split a salary.
Yeah. So like, do you ever, I guess reconsider doing that? Obviously right now, like since you're on One Day at a Time and the bold type, like you wouldn't want to split that up.
Well, there's a couple of like factors. I mean, it's theoretically sucks that we get half a salary because we really, I mean, in the writer's room, we function as two individual people. And it sucks because you want to be making more money, but the money's very good anyway. So it's not like we have anything to really complain about financially. And in terms of the writing process, it's really, really helpful to have a partner when you're on staff, because when you're writing, like, whether it's a story area or an outline or the actual script, like, the entire time you write, you're like, this is the worst thing that anyone's ever written. I'm an idiot. I'm a fraud. Like, all those things. But when you have somebody who you trust that you write with, you can write something and immediately they look at it and they're like, that's fun. That's fine. That's funny. Why are you tripping? And you're like, right, okay, yeah. And they're doing the same thing. And so it's like this, like, spiral that you have when you write alone, you don't get to have when you have a partner, which is amazing. And it makes it, like, I would say not even twice as fast. Like, the process is like four times as fast because you're not doing the, like, insane spiraling, and you have somebody. It's like being in a mini writer's room. It's like, when I'm writing something alone and I'm trying to think of a joke, sometimes I'll get stuck on that for an hour because I'm like, I know the area, but I don't know what the joke is. And then with my writing partner, I'm like, okay, there's like kind of a joke I want to do about water bottles. And she's like, oh, water bottles, goldfish. And it's like, you can bounce ideas back and forth. Right. So I think, like, at this point, while we're like staffing on shows still, it's really, I wouldn't trade in having a writing partner for anything. Like, the only downside really is the money. It gets a little different maybe when in the future, when we're going to be developing, if we have super different ideas or something, but that's tomorrow's problem.
Yeah, I'm not worrying about today.
That's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. I was reading this article today about, like, the writers programs and how, like, certain programs, they bring, like, basically they give incentive to networks to hire diverse writers by covering their fees. Like, they'll cover their salary for their first whatever season of the show. And how, like, it's kind of becomes a problem because they don't want to hire diverse, quote-unquote, diverse writers, like, just as regular staff writers. They want to go and, like, pick one off of basically the tree where they don't have to pay for it.
Yeah, what happens a lot, like, I think it's one of those things where it's, like, it's very well-intentioned and, like, it's, like, misused and abused.
Yeah.
Netflix doesn't do the diversity program, and luckily, like, I was able to, like, bypass that system. But I have a lot of friends, women of color in particular, who, you know, whether it was the NBC diversity program or the ABC diversity program, it theoretically sounds great because they provide shows and networks with incentives to hire diverse writers. They're like, hey, as you said, hire this diverse writer and we for free. Which is like, I mean, writers are expensive.
You can't say no, right?
Yeah, why would you say no? But what ends up happening is that they do that to save money. They either only ask that person to speak to the specific character that, like, if it's a black woman, they only let them, like, pitch on the black woman role, which is really not how TV works for the most part. Like, we all speak to all the characters. We all have ideas. So they're kind of disrespected just in terms of their actual talent, or it's assumed that they don't have actual talent that's applicable to other things. And what happens also is that if you want to promote the staff writer to story editor who came in on the diversity program, as soon as you promote them, you have to actually pay them.
Right.
And nobody wants to pay.
Yeah.
So they'll hire these diverse writers for a season and then fire them and then hire another diverse writer. And then those people, it's really hard for them to get other jobs because then other shows are looking at them being like, why would I want to hire you? You got fired after a season. Luckily, like, people who know, I mean, not luckily, there's people who know, they get that that's like a problem, but not enough people know. And so a lot of people get bounced around from, I have a couple different friends, women of color, who were staff writers several times on different shows and then eventually, like, moved over to working on kids shows because it was easier to get a job, and then took a really long time to get out of the kids show space, which they didn't even want to be in to begin with. But they were like, I mean, the amount of time, you shouldn't be spending more than a season as a staff writer. That's, like, very atypical, unless you're a person of color, in which case it's very typical.
Yeah, it's freaking, well, I was reading about it today and it was, like, really disheartening, because getting into those programs, like, everybody's like, yeah, I mean, there's, it's really hard to get in if you don't really like have the right connections, but there's these programs, and then like there's also a downside to them. So
but hey, Donald Glover was a diversity writer, I think, and look at him now.
Yeah,
I think on 30 Rock
there are, yeah, there's still a chance, right? Like there is that lucky one sometimes.
Yeah, well, there's so. Always an exception, but largely I think like good idea, terrible use.
Yeah.
Fuck.
But in your experience, I'm sure that you can speak to, like, you know, diverse writers actually do bring a lot of like authenticity and like great things into the writer's room.
No, I mean, no, first, of course, and to anything, even if it was a show about like, even if it had 100% white straight cast, you're still a person and you see the world a little bit differently because of who you are and your background and your context. But that only serves to make any world richer and deeper and more interesting. And why do those not sound like things you want for your television show?
Exactly. So that's what bums me out. I'm like, this, having people of color and like queer people and trans people, like, this just helps you so much.
But people get scared. People get really scared of, I mean, think about like every race and like every other has like a stereotype of being angry. It's like angry lesbians, angry black people, fiery Latinas. It's like they don't want that kind of energy in their room. Like they want to be able to do what they want to do. They don't want us to get mad. And they have a lot of like, yeah, they're stupid. But
it's a great way to put it.
And then the other struggle is that then sometimes you get in a room and somebody's like says something that's offensive and you want to call them out on it. And then you do become angry and then you fall into the stereotype. And then it's like, well, that's why we didn't want to hire you in the first place, because you act up.
Well, I mean, but that stereotype is created by like the white men anyways. So, and that's only put on others. We're the only ones that are angry, quote unquote. Yeah. And the white man is never angry, and that's just not the truth.
When white men are angry, mm-hmm. it's because something's wrong.
Like, that's yeah. justified it's all of a sudden. Right.
Right. No, it's designed for us to fail.
Yeah. Facts. And that's, I mean, I think that's why we like stand one day at a time so much, is just because not only we're seeing ourselves, we're seeing our abuelas, and the writing just comes through every single episode for us, and it's doing its work. So
yeah.
And I think also like you can watch that show no matter who you are, I think, and get something from it that feels like relatable, because things that are specific are actually more universal. It's like, even if it's like, okay, you might have a Chinese grandmother, but she probably does, like, she has her equivalent of like her Lydia moments. And because it was specific, you're like, you can recognize yourself in that. On the other hand, even beyond, like, I don't actually even care whether or not white people care about it. When people like us get to look at that and feel seen, that is like,
it's the most important
thing.
Oh
my God, I'm going to cry. I'm going to cry right now.
Let's get into One Day at a Time a little bit more. One Day at a Time, and actually Bold of Bold Type, the other show that you, one of the other shows that you write for, they both do like episodes where it concentrates on an issue for the most part. One Day at a Time is really great about like not forgetting that issue as it goes on, but they do have like episodes that concentrate on one type of topic for that episode. What's
or several topics in one episode
sometimes. Yeah. What's that like for you, or have you gotten the chance to veer out of that type of strategy, I guess, when it comes to storytelling?
It's really interesting. Like, I think that that type of storytelling really works for One Day at a Time. I also think that our showrunners, Mike and Gloria, they have a very good sense of, like, knowing when we're talking about something in a way that feels preachy or feels like a very special episode moment. And they're very, like, they're hyper aware of making sure that everything stays grounded and feels real while centering something around an issue. And that's like a very delicate balance that a lot of people, that's really hard to achieve. And it's like what they do is masterful, and what they've like helped us be able to do, I think. And like the Bold Type, especially the episode that Caroline and I wrote on the second season, was very issue based.
The Stride of Pride.
That was what it was called.
I have it in my notes.
That wasn't what it was. It went through, I mean, that was like 75 drafts. Like, we went, because wow. I mean, 75 might be an exaggeration, but barely. That was a really interesting different experience, because Netflix, super hands off, they're basically like, go make your show, we love it. That's very atypical.
It's a cool, they're cool mom from Mean Girls.
Yes, they're totally the like, here are your condoms, like have a good time. They're not like a regular network. They're a cool network. I'm currently working on a different Freeform show, and I'm not maligning Freeform in any way, but
shout out
Freeform. Can you tell us what it is?
I can tell you, but it might be useless information in like a couple days. It's currently called Besties. The name might change. It might not. The news just came out that we cast Jordan Sparks. So I feel like I'm allowed to talk about it now. But yeah, it's a multi-cam sitcom on Freeform. That'll be coming on after Grown-ish.
In a while on Freeform.
I know. I think it's
right. That's after Grown-ish. That's lit. That's a good time.
It's a Kenya Bear. Like, Kenya is our executive producer. Blackish, Ronish, that guy. Yeah. Amazing. He's amazing. But the bold type, it was a little harder to do an episode like that, even though everyone in the room really cared about a lot of the issues that we wanted to talk about. Freeform cared about those issues as well, but Freeform is owned by Disney, who has very specific, and you don't understand, like, it's like, Disney is listening to me right now, and they will arrest me. No, I'm totally kidding, but not really.
No,
but I will say this: Disney has like guidelines. They have very specific ideas about what a Disney show looks like. Even if it's a lot of people don't know, Freeform is owned by Disney, or Fox is owned by Disney, or everything in the world is owned by Disney. Yeah. But they have
like a code, I guess.
Code, sort of, but it's an M word. It'll come to me like in the middle manifesto. Of the night. I keep wanting to say manifesto, but that's not it either. That's a little too creepy. Anyway, the point is that they have a lot more notes than Netflix does, especially about sensitive topics. They're like very nervous. They have to toe a very careful line. So it was a lot harder to do those kinds of episodes on the bold type, even though we all, network included, really want to do them. There's more concerns. There's like, you have to worry about advertisers. Anyway, so that I find it impedes the process of being able to do that when you have so many outside concerns that aren't just about how you want to tell the story. It's about capitalism and advertising and all that crap gets in the middle of it. But in general, I think like when I write on my own, my writing style tends to be more, I think, like, I don't write issue-oriented stuff, but there are inherently issues because of my identity. And I think I think there's merits to both. I don't even know what your question was. I just talked for 8 hours about how Disney's going to kill me.
That's totally fine.
Shout out Disney, though. Shout out.
So you're saying Disney is not going to make Elsa gay.
They're great. They're great. They hired...
She being gay. Yeah. They don't have to make her gay, okay?
That's true.
Wait, who are we talking about?
Elsa.
Oh, come on.
From Frozen.
Yeah. Elsa being gay. Elphaba been gay.
should have been
Adina movie. Menzel only plays lesbians, and everyone knows that.
Ooh, we love facts. An ally.
Yeah. She is.
So on One Day at a Time, let's talk about some specific episodes. What episode did you do for season one?
Season one, we did Viva Cuba, where Lydia tells the story about...
Oh, that was really emotional.
Yeah.
She tells a story about, like,
her that upbringing.
Episode. They had to leave her sister behind.
And you did, like, an equally emotional episode on season two, Hello, Penelope.
You know, tell me how I got into comedy, and I'm always having to write these, like, dramatic monologues about...
All the ones that make us cry.
And those are, every time I want to cry at all your episodes, I'm noticing it as we're going through it. I was like, what the fuck? Tears, man.
For those of you that haven't seen season three, maybe, like, skip forward a little bit, but let's talk about First Time. I mean, was it just like a natural choice for them to have you and your writing partner do this episode, or how does that work?
It's funny because it breaks down by rank.
Okay.
By rank, I mean, so it's like the highest level writers will get the first scripts, and then it's so on and so forth. And it just so happened that we ended up with that episode anyway, but I do think there was some idea of like having First Time be a different episode, and then I think Gloria and Mike were like, well, if anyone's gonna write it maybe. I can't remember. I think it was around the time we were gonna write an episode anyway, and it made sense for us to write it.
Right on. That's cool. Well, I guess we can kind of tackle a little bit of a thing that I'm very curious about when it comes to TV writing, which is like fandom and their backlash and like all their dealing with basically all their feedback after the episode airs, which like you can't change anything afterwards. So it's like,
it's kind of a good thing though, isn't it?
It's like... good, but it's also like tough. So like specifically with that episode, like for example, when I thought that the
one day at a time, I know what you're gonna say, I think, but yeah, keep going.
I thought that the one day at a time writers, like their Twitter or whatever, they handled it really well. I don't know who's behind that, but the safe sex talk.
Okay, this is like, so normally like I love the trolls, like, and by the way, like hardly anybody ever says anything negative about One Day at a Time.
Seriously.
I don't even get to have my fun of like the trolls, but that was the first thing where I really was like, it like kept me up at night. I was like, oh my god, no, I want to like tell people that's not what we meant. And I do feel horrible and was personally responsible. We originally had, first of all, like our first drafts always are way too long. And in our first draft, we had the scene between Penelope and Ramona was much longer. Also because I just only want to write for Judy Reyes all the time.
Thank you.
Shout out to Claus.
I'm talking about another ally, like that is a goddess. She's so gorgeous and she's like the funny anyway, whatever, this is not about Judy, but Judy's a legend. So we were just like having my writing partner having so much fun writing that scene, and we had this whole run about, you know, the one about Penelope being like, I don't know how to teach safe lesbian sex, and originally that was actually like the larger chunk of the scene. And Ramona, so originally Penelope brought up dental dams and Ramona laughed and then was like, no, I'm just kidding, I actually like dental dams. And she like gave like a paragraph long spiel about dental dams, which we thought read as a joke, because at first she's laughing and being like, nobody uses those, which is kind of true.
Yeah,
but then it's like, no, let's get serious for a minute. Dental dams are real and they are helpful, and they like, this is how you have safe lesbian sex. So we had her do the joke and then give the lesson, but it was really long because I was having so much fun with it. So of course, like every time we did a draft, that part kept having to get smaller and smaller because it wasn't on story. And I think that's the thing sometimes as writers, we forget when we're doing stuff about sensitive topics. At the end of the day, like when we're in the middle of it, we're thinking about story and we forget about those details. So we start cutting things sometimes that are really important for reasons other than story. And that's kind of what happened there. I think we maybe even shot a line that made it make sense, and then in editing we had to cut and move some things around. And Ramona's response in that scene, I think maybe the Odette Twitter, when she says you don't have to worry, what does she say exactly?
She basically says that
she's basically like, there's very little risk,
which with their particular situation isn't wrong.
Well, so that there was also initially a longer conversation there where she was like, these are two people, of course, not knowing that Sid has had sex before, but these are two people who are young. They probably don't have a lot of sexual experience. They've probably not picked anything up. They're probably only going to be sleeping with each other. There's like, and also lesbians in general are like a fairly low risk population. That's not saying that there is no risk, but initially there was more context to say like, this specific situation is low risk, so you can relax about that. But because of the way we had to edit it, it now ends up seeming like Ramona's being like, forget about it, lesbians can't get STDs, like, have a smoke and chill out. Like, and it does seem, I feel like terrible that that's accidentally the message that we put out. And it's nobody's, I'm not like blaming anybody for the cuts that we made. We just sometimes our eyes on off the ball, or it's on a different ball. And I will forever be up at night being like, some 15-year-old girl just got an STD because we said that it was,
the statistics are actually super crazy high, even for like little kids. So it's like really fucked up out there right now. Like,
oh, and by the way, like you should see me, like, I just stopped. We weren't even talking about STDs on this other show I'm on, and I like stopped the room to go on a rant about how HIV, HIV is on the rise, and nobody cares, and nobody's talking about it, and like nobody's on PrEP, and blah blah blah. And like I feel very it hurts. It hurts to have done that. Even I think accidentally.
Some important things happened in that episode anyway. So yeah. Like Sid saying that she got tested. I thought that was huge. Still super important.
For like a queer person.
And still left tested. A pretty decent message of like queer people need to get tested. Like Sid did it. She's smart.
Yeah, even these if you only kids. Like yeah, a woman only slept with other women who only slept with other whatever, you gotta get tested. Also, because STDs aren't only transmitted through sex. So anyway, you just have to get tested.
Right.
And there was like a huge conversation about consent in that episode that was crazy.
There's a lot of important stuff that like I don't think should be erased just because of some like lack of clarity. I mean, it
doesn't take away from the show at all. It's just okay, this is like one thing and everything else is amazing. Like that, and who's going to know that if they're not like a queer person?
Like, but it stresses me out. Like yeah. It makes me feel like I wish that conversation hadn't even happened, because if it hadn't even happened, people wouldn't be like, I mean, you might be able to be like, why didn't they talk about safe? Like, why didn't Penelope ask about safe sex or something? But like, at least we wouldn't have given incorrect information. And I think that's what's.
But it's good because now they're gonna go ask these questions at least, because you know Elena and Sid had that conversation. So I feel like little kids have access to things, and maybe they're gonna go ahead and take that next step because they saw this episode and there was consent, there was a conversation had before anything happened. So I feel like these little kids might actually still take that extra step, you know?
Well, hopefully they go get tested.
Yes.
Straight up. So now you wrote for season 2 of Bold Type and you did mm-hmm. season 3 as well? Sorry?
No, we had to go back to One Day at a Time. Ah, season 3. Because they wrote 2 and 3 of Bold Type back to back.
Oh, okay.
So we had to leave to go back to One Day at a Time.
Ooh, that's right, because they got renewed for 2 seasons. Mm-hmm. I remember that. Okay. Well, on season 2 of it, you guys wrote That's Right, a Pride episode. We already talked about that a little bit. But you also, instead of just staff writer, you went to the executive story editor role? Is mm-hmm. that right?
That's, yeah.
Is yeah. that like, that's just kind of like a promotional type of thing?
Yeah,
like
all the titles are kind of like meaningless. It just sort of means like you got
been there long, doing, done more stuff.
Money and yeah. Mm. So it's okay. Staff writer, story editor, executive story editor.
Still exciting.
And now... Though. Now I'm a co-producer.
Oh,
sounds right. Very fancy. Okay. Doesn't mean nothing.
We see.
That's dope. And then super quickly, I want to touch on just like fandom again in a more...
Ooh, those Kadena fans. Yes. Oh, I never got that kind of heat up. That's what I'm talking about. The fun they trolls.
They were mad.
I mean, you don't... The amount of like... So I put on my Twitter like that I was writing on the Bold Type, the amount of immediate DMs I got that said, if you bring up Kat and Adina, I'll kill myself or I'll kill you. I'll skin you. Like,
oh no.
Oh, I mean, it really doesn't bother. I mean, they're not going to kill me.
Yeah.
I'm not actually afraid of it. It is like, I mean.
But it's a lot, dude.
Crazy fun.
And what the worst part, I think, to me, like watching the reactions of fandom sometimes, because I'm like. Just I don't know why, like I just always want to know what people are thinking about the stuff that I like, and I go on totally. Tumblr and I make that mistake every single year, and and they never know. Like Emily Andrews, actually from Winona Earp, like makes this point a lot, like they don't know what they want. Like they think that it's they true. Want smut, they think that they want happy all the time, but they don't want that. They
do
want
you know
to be
how
tortured.
Boring it's a TV boring. Show would be if a couple stayed together the whole time.
It'd
so
be
also unrealistic as hell. Yeah. By the way, Adina is Kat's. Adina is Kat's very first girlfriend.
It doesn't make sense to like. That's
they
her true
should
love
break
or
up.
Whatever.
By
they
the way,
need to. They
and they
need
needed
to, break
to
up.
Anyway. And also, my other and like, I get it. I've been a lesbian who never saw representation, and you just like you want
you
grab
latch
onto
on.
The damn thing
right.
you grab onto. But Adina has problematic behavior. She's manipulative. Okay, I have a lot of feelings about it.
No, yeah.
She reminds me of one of my girlfriends, so this is why I was always like, they need to break. Well, I'm not the reason they broke up. I wasn't even there by the
right,
time they wrote that.
Right, this is a collaborative effort too.
But like, I was pushing for it.
They never. They no, always think it's like this is one person that is responsible. Like, no, this is a collaborative episode. Like,
oh yeah, thing. Everybody. We all. I mean, yes, we all are part of every decision yeah. for the most part. Showrunners obviously have more say, but
yeah.
I have a lot of opinions about Kadena. I do think that like. It reminded me of my first relationship with a girl who was a couple years older than me and was like, I'm a free spirit. And like, you know, which is like hot and cool. And like, I
An
respect that identity,
you.
But it's a little bit sometimes also when you are, you're insecure. Cause it's like your first experience, whatever. And I think that there's like a power imbalance that happens naturally sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, it's really important to break up and for Kat to, like, come into her own. And then, because it's a TV show, they can get back together in 2 seasons. I'm not there anymore. This is not spoilers. I'm just saying that in a life way, like, you can meet that person again when you're at a different point in your life and you're more mature and you can be on equal footing. I don't want to see Kat in a relationship where I don't think she's on equal footing. And that actually makes me a true Akadina fan.
Oh, so, work.
Bye-bye.
The writer knows better than the fans. Like, I'm sorry. That's the truth.
Also,
like,
every time Adina walked into the room, it was like, oh, I've been getting death threats. It's like, oh my God, Adina, like, lighten up.
Seriously.
We tried to make Adina more fun, but not that she wasn't fun, but a lot of stuff happens to her.
Wow. Well, let's end it on a more personal note. I want to know, like, outside of literally you acting in roles, because you acted in a couple of things, including One Day at a Time.
Yeah, I was there we saw you.
I was there for that live screening, and I remember being like, oh my God, that's Michelle Badillo with Stephanie Beatrice. I'm going to fucking pass out in this audience.
She's the best.
Yeah.
That was great. And yeah, so other than, like, you're literally seeing yourself represented in the media, like, do you see yourself in other shows or other content? Like, as far as representation goes. And what are you watching?
What am I watching? What do you have time to watch right now?
Oh, I last night started watching, or 2 nights ago, I started watching Pen 15 on Hulu.
Yes. That's such a good show.
Oh my God.
It's so awkward, though.
The masturbation episode?
Dude,
I cried.
Episode 3?
I cried.
That's real as fuck.
Really?
Yeah. Because I was like, what is it? Like, why? Like, as soon as, like, not everyone, but as soon as girls start masturbating, they're like, oh my God, I should be ashamed of this. And then you, like, don't get rid of that for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Anyway, I love that show. I really have, like, no time to watch.
Yeah.
Which is, like, you become a TV writer because you love TV, and then you can't watch TV.
No, I get it. I became a podcaster, and I was like, I don't want to fucking listen to podcasts anymore. Fuck this
shit. We only listen to our friends now.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm a big Search Party fan.
Search Party. I love Alia Shaka. She's the best.
Oh, she's the best.
Yeah.
Broad City.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. This last season is so good.
Did you see that first episode of this recent season?
Of course.
This last season.
The format, like, how they pulled it off.
They pulled it off.
They pulled it off so fucking well.
I was like, when it started, I was like, okay, let's see. Because, like, 4 seasons, a little shaky, you know? Mm. But they... Oh, my God. I was right back in.
Yeah. They brought it back. Came back strong.
And then, you know, like, Game of Thrones.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Literally every fucking person in the world, yeah.
Yeah.
You got to.
Honestly, I was pretty pissed when, like, this should be one of our future should have been gays, or maybe already has been, but Danny with, I forget her name.
Oh, fuck.
But the lesbian
character.
Yara.
Yeah. Yes.
Yara. Well, in the book, her name is Asha, so sometimes I get confused. Yeah. Anyway. Now that I'm in,
you know, I ship the fuck out of that.
And that would have been hot. It's never going to happen, but it would have been hot.
They had chemistry. And killed me. Yeah, their chemistry.
They had chemistry. And that's real. That's not just, like, lesbians being crazy. They had chemistry.
That was real. Everybody saw it.
Thank you.
Gay men that I watched it with. Yeah, no, it's real. Cool. So, yeah. But as far as representation, I mean, literally, I think the one that I always mention is Elena, seeing myself in Elena. And actually Penelope sometimes.
Oh, I feel like I sound like Penelope sounds most like the voice in my head.
Yeah.
Like, Penelope's... I actually, like, I write, I feel like I write way better jokes for Penelope than I do for Elena anymore.
For sure.
No, I'm like, definitely probably more the, like, Elena / Abuela. That's, like, my mom and me's dynamic completely.
My God, that's my favorite.
Like, there's no Penelope in our family except maybe my brother, but it's just, like, straight, like, that age difference is real. So
that's hell, yeah.
Yeah. It's badass.
I know. I mean, the only, what, like, Santana on Glee?
Oh, my God.
I mean, look, she was hot.
And they just, like, Ryan just really messed with us with all that.
Yeah. I was kind of into her being super bitchy, though. Like, I was loved, like, it. Fuck yes. Read the fuck out of everyone for no reason, just cause.
Speaking of bitchy, I, like, in honor of season 3 of One Day at a Time, I changed my Twitter name.
Yep. I saw it?
I saw it.
Because I was like, I saw Thea Bitchy in my feed. I was like, who did it? Who's... Oh my God. By the way, like, I feel like the takes they used weren't even, like, the funniest takes. Like,
yeah.
That's what she said.
Were you there?
I was there, yeah.
Who come at Thea Bitchy? I mean, she took up the genius, room. It was operatic.
It was fucking amazing.
I could have listened to it all day.
There was so much, like, actually raunchy shit that, like, that happened, like, takes that they did that I was surprised.
Can I give a little tidbit?
Yeah.
So Liz Torres is, I don't think this is a secret, she's hard of hearing. So the woman playing one of her, one of the other Theas, would elbow her whenever it was her line.
Yeah.
But she's like an old pro. She's an OG. She's not even paying attention, really. She doesn't even have to because she's a pro. And so, like, sometimes they would nudge her and she wouldn't know which line we were at, so she would just shout out the wrong line. But the take was so good anyway that nobody even cared. Like, we must have done it 50 times where she kept being like, "That was a wedding? Oh wait, who called me the energy?" Like, she would just
straight up.
Yes. Oh my god,
it was fucking hilarious.
Oh my god, she is like so fucking. Also, funny. She is so my family. Like this, just like so loud old lady.
Fucking great.
She's just like. Whoa.
Yes, the grunting was the best part. Oh my god. Okay, awesome. I guess this just ended up with talking about like how us as fangirls are super excited that we have like some writers in the room who are putting shit out there that we really love, so we appreciate it.
Thing means everything
so much. We're having, glad that you're out there,
especially like seeing Sid be non-binary and having those pronouns. Like, what? Fuck yeah,
that was good stuff.
Like, it's pretty revolutionary to us to see that. So
yeah. It's tough to get that to work, like to get that on screen, and it's like an honor and a privilege.
For sure. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Do you want to like give your social media handles or anywhere that we can support you?
Twitter, Instagram at Mr. Spelled Out, so Mister Michelle, and then an underscore at the end. You know. To just leave it hanging like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Because Mr. Michelle without it wasn't available.
God, don't you hate that whenever like the at isn't available?
And I'm like, who else?
You have way better Twitter than they do. Like,
I know.
Did you find the other Mr. Michelle?
Yeah, and I'm like, why? They have like 3 tweets, and like I'm like, you don't even look like it doesn't even work for you. I mean, that's not for me to say. And by the way, you know that there's like a very famous Venezuelan. Like personality / like TV reporter named Michelle Badillo.
I did not know that.
So I can never get it on Twitter. She always pops up on Google in front of me. Her wedding was televised. I mean, my whole life. God. Since the very first time I Googled my name, she's been haunting me. She's she was like Miss Venezuela. Like, she is my enemy. My enemy.
I would be fucking livid.
But now when she Googles herself, she sees a couple of my pictures. So I'm creeping. Yeah. I'm coming up.
That's dope.
You got this.
You're going to overtake her one day. I just know it.
Oh, my God.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on once again. Follow us at CYC Podcast. And any links on all the stuff that we talked about today will be on cabronasychingonas.com.
Yeah, you can follow us on Patreon to support. There's 3 different levels. Follow us. Yeah, I'm Fred Papita.
I'm Maite. Watch One Day at a Time and The Bold Type, Netflix and Hulu respectively, and in the future, Freeform. Whatever the show name ends up being, probably Besties.
The show formerly known as Besties or Besties. The show with Jordan Sparks.
We'll let you know. I don't know. We'll figure it out. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.